Can we get much higher? So high.
Hello, Del.
Good afternoon, Andy.
Thank God for you. How can you not remember a movie like that?
Well, I only get paid for 55 minutes because you talked for the first five lead-in, so I left you hanging there for a little bit.
Oh,
no, I do know that movie.
Yeah, great movie. In Sunshine.
Yes.
You Are Like Sunshine.
Long hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The cool guy.
Yeah.
The guy that everyone just loves.
Which most AFL players are trying to look like at the moment with the man bun.
It's true. Hey, are you okay?
I'm very well.
No, are you okay?
Why?
Because I know you're a big Odell Beckham fan.
Yeah, I am.
And you've invested a lot in Odell Beckham merchandise.
Oh, yes.
Now, as of about half an hour ago, that merchandise is obsolete.
Now I've got to roll it in the dirt outside to make it look brown. Is that what you're saying?
Brown and
hopefully
orange.
Hopefully at least he still wears number 13. I'm staggered by that move.
It's an unbelievable story.
The bit I do love about it is, unlike probably the AFL environment at the moment and the idea of free agency and trade, the big name players. And I know the Giants have been really poor for a period of time, but at least a big club in a huge city, great marketplace for them to earn money outside of just their playing contract, goes to a club like the Cleveland Browns.
It's amazing.
That's like someone from a really good player or potentially the best player at the Tigers or at the West Coast Eagles saying, you know what, I'm going to leave for more money or really good money again. I'm going to go to the Suns. I'm going to head away to a club that has been battling for a period of time. There's probably three or four that you could probably pick. And I'm going to go up there and try and turn that, in America, franchise around here, turn that club around. It's not really happening in our system.
Give me an AFL example. For people who don't follow American football and what happens in the National Football League over there, and they don't know who Odell Beckham is,
give it.
Try and put it into some sort of AFL context.
Okay, good point. Well, you can't probably take him away from a West Coast or Richmond because the Giants haven't been that for a period of time. But it's like a big club. So it's probably an Essendon or
maybe Lance Franklin.
Yeah, probably like a buddy sort of. Yeah. Think about the most loud player
freakish
out there, but just has freakish ability, brings the franchise together in regards to marketability, based out of New York, which is a huge marketplace globally. And then it is the equivalent of going to the Gold Coast Suns.
It just is. Yep. Like a team, a club, a friend, whatever you want to call it, that is despised, is renowned for just getting it wrong and buggering it up.
Particularly with their quarterbacks.
Yeah, well, yes, but they've got a good one now.
Oh, yes.
They've finally got a good one now. But they're remarkable.
But unproven, Baker.
That is true. That is true.
Has had some good games last year, but still got a long way to go.
The incredible thing about this, it was only last year, the middle of last year, that the Giants committed to Odell Beckham beyond the contract that they already had with a five-year, $90 million contract. It made him the highest paid wide receiver in the National Football League.
More than Antonio Brown.
Yep, who's also gone from Pittsburgh to the Raiders. So the two best.
Which I like that.
Yeah, I know you do because you like the Raiders. You got a bit of Raider gear.
Just to put some context around this, Andy has a really big beanie's bonnet that I love NFL and I support the New England Patriots because I'm a massive Tom Brady fan and I love Julian Edelman and all the rest of them, but I like the emblems of other clubs, so I'm prepared to wear whatever it is as long as I think it looks good, and it really annoys you.
It can't be a fashion accessory, and this is what we're going to talk about this in the context of the Western Bulldogs jumper in a moment, this is that whole thing about, and I reckon if we can't ask, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old kids to call in. They can if they want, but hopefully they're at school. But if you're a mum or a dad out there, 1-300-736-736, this is a bit of the cult of personality that's going on here. You follow the player as opposed to following the team.
Yeah.
And I reckon there's more and more of this happening in other sports around the. There will be people all over the world, and our primary school's a classic example of this, Del. The kids wear Lionel Messi Barcelona shirts more than they wear Richmond Footy Club jumpers.
Yeah.
They do. There's more soccer shirts in the playground, which is perhaps some concern in and of itself. But if Lionel Messi went from Barcelona tomorrow, went and played for Manchester United the day after, hey, that kid, I can't wear this shirt anymore.
Yes.
It's true, isn't it?
Yes, yep.
So are we starting to is this potentially one of the pitfalls of a really active and fluid player movement market?
It's starting to occur, isn't it? And there's SMS has been popping up, so thanks a lot for those examples. But the most obvious one is Gary Ablett went from Geelong to the Suns.
Yeah, true. So that's a good example.
It's a fantastic. Yep. It is almost the same in our context in regards to Odell Beckham leaving New York to go to the Browns. But I think it is starting to occur.
It is, isn't it?
With player movement as well. I don't think that we change clubs, but we keep a really close eye on the player at the next club. Even though you don't support him. So if it's Buddy Franklin, the Hawthorn supporters still barrack for Hawthorn, but we all love watching Buddy on the side anyway. So you've always got an eye on the Sydney Swans forward line just in case, just because you want to enjoy it as well. That is how I feel about Odell Beckham. I only watch New York Giants games because I want to see if Odell Beckham does one of those. I don't want to see Eli Manning throwing pies all day. I don't want to see their defense giving up 30 or 40 a week, but I want to see what Odell Beckham does.
No, it's a good point. And we should, if you're listening, Ashley Brown, we'll probably give you a call at some stage between now and 3 o'clock just to get a sense from you as a bit the biggest G-man in this building as to how you're feeling about all of this. I wonder whether it's a way of the future. Wayne's in Cranbourne and has jumped on the line, wants to have a chat about Odell Beckham Jr. Wayne, it's big news, my friend. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no worries, boys. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear.
Yeah, just a heads up. I'm a Miami Dolphins fan, and last year we lost our number one wide receiver to the Browns, whose name is Jarvis Landry, and his best mate is Odell Beckham Jr.
Correct.
So there's the answer.
They went to college together.
That's true. Mm. That's a very interesting tie-in.
With Brad Wing, the Australian, the punter that used to be at the New York Giants, they're all best mates.
Has he gone to...
No, I think he's finished, Brad Wing.
He's finished, has he? He might
as
come
a punter,
back.
Yeah, get him to the Browns.
That's interesting, Wayne. And again, it's probably one of those sports that would allow friends to do this sort of stuff, collaborate, you know, get together, work it out through management companies. You know, we're starting to see more. We're starting to see potentially a lot of that happening in the NBA.
Do you know what I am loving about the movement, though, in NBA or NFL? Don't throw your top out just yet, because it's only a period of time until Odell's back at the Giants and your T-shirt looks fantastic. I've still got a Dwayne Wade jersey from 10 years ago. Nearly threw it out, went back to the drawer, dusted off, wearing it again.
It's true. But I do worry about you, because I think deep down you are a bit of you do follow the individual more than you follow the team. I think there's a bit of that about you.
Yeah,
Tim's in Brunswick East. Hello, Tim.
Yeah, g'day, Andy. G'day, Del. I love the NFL and I got the app and the alert came up in my feed and I was like stunned.
Yeah.
But the whole thing about the Brands and, you know, Del liking, you know, going to the Patriots by liking other brands. I'm the same. I've always been a mad Jets fan and, you know, never suffered any victories. But I love the other teams, like Brands, and I love their cultures and I love their game. You know, I think I was the only person on Super Bowl Day this year cheering for the Patriots.
Yeah,
because I who doesn't love a very famous franchise? Who doesn't love a team that wins well? You know, it's like the Hawthorn. I'm not a Hawthorn supporter. I'm a West Coast fan. But when they won 3 in a row, I thought that was fantastic. I wanted to win 4 in a row.
I think you
love those brands, you love those cultures, you love those teams that, you know, play well and win. They don't win because they cheat or play bad. They win because they're great. And yeah, I'm a Jets fan, but you know, I'll see.
It's a good call, Tim, and I appreciate it. And I think the dynasties, the dynasty stories, are fantastic for the sport.
Yeah,
you might get a bit sick and tired of them while it's happening.
Yes.
But in 10 years' time, 15, 20 years' time, hopefully we're still here, Del and Tim, and it shines a light on the greatness of that group and the magnitude of their achievement. Yeah. That's why dynasties are great.
Let me put one back on you. You barrack for Boston Celtics in the NBA. Do you keep a close eye on Philadelphia because of Ben Simmons?
A little more than I would.
There's a lot of Ben Simmons jerseys getting around the streets.
Loads of them.
Particularly young kids.
Mm.
Now, if he leaves, say he goes to LA and he joins up with the rest of them, who's everyone going to support again?
Well, ta-da, Philadelphia 76ers.
Of course.
100% gone.
Of course.
Totally transferable.
So does it depend on the individual and the connection that you may have with them as an individual looking at, like, we love Ben Simmons, he's Australian, we feel like we know him, he's grown up around the corner. Now he's in Philadelphia. We've jumped on board. Mm. And plus, they televised flat out again, which is good to see.
Yep.
But if he goes to LA or any other club, we're on board.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt. And this is a partial worry to me. I think the two sports that we're talking about in the American context,
yep,
are a bit different than us because our teams are bigger and there's more players and individual players aren't as influential in Aussie rules football as they are in the American game or in a game of basketball.
What do you think of people when you say, g'day young fella or young little lady, who do you barrack for? And they said, I barrack for the Blues, but I used to barrack for them. You automatically judge them.
Yeah,
really?
I do.
Of course you do. I do as well. You go, oh, you've changed, have you? Mm. Oh, okay.
And general, what, do you ever ask why you've changed?
Yeah, sometimes.
It's often about this.
Yeah.
It's often about one or two things. Either my team never won and they did, and everyone at school barracked for this team, so I wanted to be in the gang, or... Oh, I used to love Hawthorn when Buddy was there. Now he plays at Sydney, so I want to barrack for. I want to follow Sydney now.
Or my parents said I'm not allowed to live in the house anymore.
That's a bit of that.
They won't support me as a child growing up.
Matt's in Sydney and wants to join in the conversation. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Yeah, g'day, boys. Yeah, I'm just joining in because I've got two little boys. We follow the Giants up there. There's no way we could follow the Swans after growing up in Victoria. My little fella, he's seven now, but as a 2-3-year-old, he's a foundation member, and he got a football from Steve Coniglio. We'll follow him wherever he goes. Yeah. So hopefully we've talked him around to signing in for the next few years at the fan day. He also loves Nat Nui. We've been to Fiji a few times, and he loved the Fijians. And as soon as I told him Nat Nui was Fijian, he's all over Nat Nui, so he will follow Nat Nui as well. So I actually do. I'm in the same boat. I think people will start to follow players and not so much the clubs or franchises that will be around, and I think that'll go around all sports as well.
Mm. Is it a dangerous thing for an industry if we start supporting the player more than the club?
Oh, I think it is.
Regards to membership or whatever, is that a dangerous path to go down if we start chasing the American style?
Oh, I think it is.
Yeah.
I saw this at the club that you may not know, but I sort of barracked for Carlton.
Well, I was at the game on Monday. I could hear you from the boundary side cheering them on while you were commentating.
When Carlton secured the signature of Chris Judd, the reaction was ridiculous. The reaction amongst Carlton supporters was ridiculous, and it did have an impact on the club's bottom line because you do get a spike in memberships. And not that it was overly significant, but you do.
Yeah.
And clubs will go, you know what, if we bring this person A to our club, there is a benefit from a bottom line, like a commercial benefit to bringing those people to the club. We know that. We've seen the sales of their jerseys or whatever it might be elsewhere. Well, we can get a piece of that.
How much is that taken into account?
Well, what the hell are the Western Bulldogs doing? Oh, this is a different. This is branching off into a slightly different perspective.
Sorry, I was going to say, who did they get over?
But
the summer?
They'll do it. Footy clubs these days will do anything for a buck, and we'll get to that. And I reckon in the big picture context of the one that we're having about Odell Beckham and what it looks like in the Australian Football League context. Don't you reckon that this is going to be a bigger thing in the future?
Possibly.
We'll get a whole lot of people come over and to some degree support us because of this person.
Well, as good as Buddy is and on his own merits as a player, deserves every single thing that he gets when moving to Sydney. But there has to be a commercial part of that as well. I say, get him here. That is going to work for us on the bottom line, but also on field. And that's a tick-tick for mine. That's the biggest one that I can think of as a move commercially and performance on field.
You'd love to know what Gaz did for Gold Coast in terms of were people up there buying Gold Coast jumpers?
What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I've actually got no idea.
I'd have to say no.
Yeah, because...
Well, he couldn't have done much more for the player that he was up there. I mean, he wins a Brownlow. He's very, very good for a period of time. But I remember I was driving to a game in a cab, working the game, and the cab driver said, oh, where are you heading? I said, Metricon, yada, yada. He goes, oh, that good player's name, how's he tracking? Right, okay. I said, he left last year.
Yeah, that's not good.
Couldn't remember his name and didn't realise he's gone. So I'm not sure if that impact commercially would have... I don't know how many jerseys they sold with... Was he number 9 up there? Not sure how many jerseys they sold of number 9.
Good get. Paul's in Northcote. Brand's in sport. Paul, join the conversation.
No worries, Andy and Dal. How are you going?
Good, mate.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I was just going to talk about Juddy as well when he came to Carlton. It was just like a major thing, wasn't it?
Oh, huge. Huge.
Oh, it was massive. Everybody just went out, bought memberships that I know, as soon as he came.
Yeah, and that's what clubs will do, Paul. They're going to be attracted to these big brands who are sort of half transcend the sport a little bit. And we're going to do more. In America, they've been happy to promote the individual, you know, because of all of the commercial benefits that come with it. We've been a bit reluctant to do that, I reckon, in Australia. It's all been about team more than about individual, more often than not.
As much as NFL is a team sport and there's three different sides that come on with offense, defense, and special teams, it's still individual plays that make the difference, though. So there's still an individuality about that sport. Basketball's got a tinge of that in as well when you've got five on the court but only three of them are allowed to touch it.
Mate, the most respected player in the New England team just about is a bloke called Matthew Slater, who no one knows. No one outside of New England has got any idea who he is. What are you saying him for?
Well,
Mix in Perth.
Yeah.
You don't even know who he is.
No.
Mix in Perth.
I only know Tom Brady, Julian Edelman and Gronkowski.
So disappointing. Mix in Perth before we get to a break. How are you, mate?
Hey, guys. I'm good. Good morning. It's morning over here still.
Of course.
I'm not a big F1 fan, but now I love Renault now.
Oh, well, because of Ricciardo.
Yeah. Well, that's a classic. Well, I guess the Ferrari fans follow Ferrari no matter what, but to the rest. But we should have this conversation later in the week with the Grand Prix coming up.
Does anyone actually follow the car?
Ferrari? Oh, people
in Australia? I know, mate, it might be a bit more Italian.
Have you heard of the Hardy Ferrodo 1000?
No.
The race up at Mount Panorama?
No.
Oh, you to ask a Ford, do you follow Ford or Holden?
Yeah. Okay.
My lordy me. It's a question I'm hopefully going to have time to throw open a bit later on. But Del, the question is the genie too far out of the bottle now, or is it a fight worth having? And that is protecting jumpers. And we're talking about the Western Bulldogs jumper, of course.
It's being stretched, isn't it?
What do you think?
That's as bad as I've seen from a jumper.
Explain what you mean bad.
No genuine resemblance to the football club, apart from just having the colours, but to have those graphics on it. And I'm not a hater of alternative strips. I actually was one of the very few that didn't mind that Hawks one from a couple of years ago. It had a bit of silver and a bit of glisten. Like, I didn't hate it. I could understand that it was a bit out there, but I could cop that. When I saw that this morning, I felt sorry for Easton Wood. And well done for him for being the poster boy that's now going to be the image posted everywhere regarding this jumper. And this could go for years. I mean, there's been some stinkers over these. This is as bad as I've seen regarding trying to encapsulate still the history and the colours and the meaning of the Western Bulldogs jumper while twinkling in a little bit of, what movie is it?
It's Captain Marvel.
Obvious.
Captain
Marvel.
Thor. No, Thor. It's not a Thor in spot. It's an I-Thor.
Come on.
It's an I-Thor. That's what it is.
That's a stretch.
Is that good?
I-Thor? Is that over the top to say that? What's your top? That's as bad as I've seen.
This is the worst I've seen.
That's okay.
Well, it's our first game at Marvel Stadium, so I thought that get a Thor-inspired Guernsey for us to run out with in round one, and pretty happy with the result, man. Well, I came to the leadership group to get our thoughts on. They had the idea to match it all up, and it was a pretty resounding support from everyone in the room. All the boys are big Marvel fans, so yeah, we're excited to run out and have that little superhero connection.
Yeah, sure. Sure you were, Easton. If anyone believes that, honestly, he's having a laugh when he's actually saying it. I'll do the joke again because you didn't even hear it last time. It's not a Thor jumper. It's an I-Thor jumper. That's the last time I do that joke. You still haven't given me anything for it.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Mate, when
I can't get past that jumper.
When you do the – look, I love the Indigenous jumpers.
Yes.
I love when Essendon wore the yellow strip for Anna Ramanaskis.
Yep.
I love the Carlton girls jumper this week supporting the Pride game. There's cause-related jumpers that if they're done tastefully and it's still recognisable what the jumper is, but you're supporting a bigger picture cause, fantastic. No problems. But be respectful of the jumper. This is purely commerce. But as was your yellow jumper when you wore it for Pyramid.
I was in my first or second year.
Can you remember, is it going too far back to ask you, before we get to some calls, to how you and the boys felt when you pulled that on to go out and play in it?
I can't really recall. I reckon we played at Optus
no doubt
against the Blues in about my first or second year. Oh, to be honest, I had no idea.
Yeah,
I was a kid.
Yeah,
I was 18 years of age and just did whatever we were told to do. And we happened to wear yellow and I think we won the game.
Probably. Aaron Hamill probably kicked seven.
Yeah. But no, I can't recall. But if put it into today's context, you'd be rolling your eyes a little bit. So Easton Wood, Marcus Bontempelli, Lockie Hunter, Jason Johannesson, Jackson Trengrove and Mitch Wallace, shame on you for ticking that off. If you're a leadership group and they weren't given a choice, let's be brutally honest, Andy. The club's going to come to them and say, boys, this is how it's going to go. We're in a leadership meeting on a Monday morning. Marvel, first game, we're going to wear this Thor jumper, tick, tick, tick. Yep, everyone's happy, we move on. And they hang on a second, I didn't get to vote then. No, no, you all voted and we all ticked it off.
I know you want to talk about leadership groups.
I do.
But what if the leadership group had said, nah, we're not wearing that, it's a joke. We're not running out. We are not running out representing our football club in that jumper. What would the club do?
I reckon they'd get outvoted. It's above them. It's above the playing group, unfortunately, something like the playing jumper. That's a commercial decision, as you've stated. That's got nothing to do with the playing group. And they might even use it as some sort of challenge, to a way to, you know, get themselves going, and that we look like a little bit silly, let's say, and we're still going to get the job done.
It's just there is nothing positive about that. But then but I'm just an old man these days.
No. Hey, I'm a little bit younger, but I'm with you on that right. one.
Andrew's on the road. We could talk about this jumper all day, I reckon, Andy. We won't, but we could. What do you think of it?
G'day, Andy. G'day, Jal.
Afternoon.
I'm struggling with this. Firstly, let me say I'm not a Bulldogs supporter. I'm actually a Carlton supporter.
But in our club, we did it, Andrew. We did it with that stupid M&M's jumper. It was ridiculous.
I know we did. I was embarrassed then and I'm embarrassed still. But let me just say, I'm struggling to understand at what point in history did we lose where the line was drawn in terms of protecting your club's identity. Now, I don't understand why the Bulldogs need to do this. I do understand that they need to make a dollar any way that they can. But seriously, to wear that and then to have your captain or whoever said it get out and say, we're seen as superheroes, so this is what we're going to wear. I mean, are they going to wear capes next? This is a joke, and they should be embarrassed.
I've got a double P. You have hit so many nails on the head on the way through there, Andy. I've got a double pass to celebrate St. Paddy's Day this Friday at the Valley. Go to thevalley.com.au if you want to be part of it. And I'm also going to chuck in a copy of the 2019 AFL record season guide. You've made so many good points on the way through there. Steve's in Melton. Your thoughts on this?
Guys,
your thoughts on the jumper, Steve?
Guys, I'm born in Footscray. I bleed red, white and blue. And I'll tell you what, boys, this is so embarrassing. I can't believe our club sold ourselves. Just for just for one game. I don't know if you know the board needs a kick in the teeth and needs to wake up and say, what are we standing for? What is our club really standing for? I mean, our jumper is so valuable, so important, and it's just disgraced it. I just feel ashamed of it. Seriously,
I feel for you.
My emotion.
No, I feel for you, Steve. I know exactly where I know exactly where you're coming from. Mark's in Geelong. Your thoughts, Mark?
Hey, Andy. Hi, Nick.
Afternoon. What's your thoughts on this Western Bulldogs alternate strip?
Yeah, sorry. This was a slight tangent on why AFL don't put names on the back of the shirts.
Yes.
Slightly relative to earlier with selling more shirts and that, and better to watch.
You want the names on the back of the shirts, do you? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I wonder why AFL don't allow it or don't do it.
Do we need them?
I was going to say, it's not a huge thing. No. I mean, because the field's obviously so big, it's a little bit different once again with NFL and particularly basketball in the States that you feel like you're closer to it. The camera angles are possibly closer to it. But it's hard to get to read the names on the back of a jumper anyway, because they're moving and it's 360 degree and sometimes it gets a bit muddy if they ever play outside, all those sort of things. I don't think it's a huge issue without having names on the back.
No, I agree.
It's more about the number that we associate a player to, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Last one is before you get to a break. There's a lot of other stuff I want to get through before we can. I honestly think the AFL shouldn't allow this. We started the show talking about American sport, and it's not the be-all and end-all, but the one thing they do is protect the integrity of the shirt. Yeah. Very little advertising. They might do a thing
here. No sponsorship. Yep.
The AFL, I know who owns Marvel Stadium. I know about all the cook-ups and the crossovers, and I understand all this. But the AFL, by allowing this to happen, it sells a part of its integrity away. And once it's gone, it can never come back. You can't get it back. Mm. We've lost so much in this game over the journey, some of it for the good, some of it not so. If this is deemed to be allowable by those in charge, and we understand why this one in particular would be, then as the first caller said, where is the line on all of this?
I know it's the round one game. It's the first one at Marvel Stadium, the old Etihad Stadium. But if that was another club, would they have to do that? A club that's got more money, more support behind them, would they even be looking at this opportunity, Andy?
Oh, I don't know, Del. I don't know. I'm really look. I could go on about this for 3 hours today. I seriously could. I'm not going to because I want people to engage in other things that we're doing, obviously. But that is just this on so many fronts that just erodes a part of what you've grown up loving about the
game.
It's gone
a bit too. It's just gone too far.
It has. It has.
That jumper is gone too far.
Yeah, good. I'm glad. Mm. That's it. We'll move on. The last text that's come through, probably right. I'm a doggy, lighten up, total beat up. Yeah, you're right, mate. You're right. It's fantastic. The other bit about that jumper, by the way, that's been pointed out by a few, the back of it's pure red.
Oh.
And they play Sydney in the first game.
I haven't seen it. The back of it's
red.
We got caught up on the front.
They play Sydney in round one, don't they? Is that right?
At Marvel Stadium.
They play Sydney round one.
Do you want to check that quickly?
West Bulldogs v Sydney, Marvel Stadium, 7:25 p.m.
Yep.
So what's the back of Sydney's jumper look like?
What, their away strip?
White on the front, red on the back.
Yeah, I think it is.
That'll be good. That'll be really
but
good.
Surely, Andy.
Jared Lyons, Del.
Don't know.
Why does he...
I don't know. I've had a look at some of his numbers, and we spoke about this on Monday. Played 55 games at the Crows over 6 years, 32 goals in that 55 games. He then goes to the Gold Coast Suns after being traded, delisted, moved on. 37 games across 2 years, 17 goals. So he's contributing is what I'm trying to say. He's now played two JLT games for the Lions, one against the Hawks, and take it with for what it's worth. It was an under-18 team that Clarko took up there. He has 26 disposals, one goal, three tackles. Then he takes on the Ds at Casey Fields over the weekend. Not a bad midfield, we'd say. A fair competition. Has another 26 disposals, four goals and five tackles. My only justification about why he gets moved on is he's never the premium midfielder within that group. So at the Crows, he wasn't, you know, he was almost the complementary player, you know, the steak knives on top of. But I don't know, Andy. These are the players that sort of, Miles is in a similar boat. Couldn't get a game at the Tigers, and rightly so. Needs to find a home. But I see Jared Lyons a bit different.
So do I. He's been in the system.
He plays a role.
He's
26 years of age. He's played a total of 92 games, 49 goals. So roughly a goal every two games. He's a goal-kicking midfielder sort of type that can play multiple roles, fill holes if he has to. I don't know.
He gets it. He doesn't go.
Uses it okay.
Is that the problem? Is he?
He's not. He's death by a thousand cuts. He's not Dusty Martin that's going to rip it out of the centre and, you know, bang one home from 60 and the place erupts.
But if he's part of your secondary, because how many midfielders do you need any week? You know,
six to seven that can rotate through with a starting three or four.
So if he's your sixth or seventh, at worst, he's going okay, aren't you?
I would have thought. And what's your take on it?
I'm a bit the same. Yeah. There's a lot of when he was leaving Adelaide, there were a lot of people at the club that I support who were thinking, you know, because there were conversations going on about players at that stage. Bryce Gibbs was one of them going back, and Lyon's name was mentioned, and there was a school of thought that no, get him, he's all right. And there were others going, no, he's a butcher, you know, like he doesn't use it well enough. But then you keep watching him play, and he never knocks your socks off.
No,
but then he plays a game where he just keeps getting it. Like two out of every three games, he just keeps getting it.
Well, what was the justification from Stuart Dew and the Suns last year off the back of having some really good individual games? And then was getting dropped.
I don't know. I can't remember. There was clearly something went wrong between the coach and the player there.
Which we don't know about, and maybe nor should we. But my disappointment with him, and we're going back here and it's all already happened, but my disappointment with him moving on from the Suns on what we see from the outside was that's the sort of player that the young kids need to learn from. Isaac Rankin comes in. I know he's done his hamstring, but you get these big, big group of young kids that are coming through. They need to learn from somebody. And we admit he's not Gary Ablett not all the best players of the last 15 or 20 years, but he's 26. So he's been through the system. He knows how to prepare for preseason. He knows how to get ready for a game. I think those sort of players are invaluable. Now, once again, put it in context. He's not the greatest leader that the game's ever seen, but he's something. He's definitely not nothing, and he's been there and done that and has had a kick on the big stage, and he's played some decent games and kicks a goal here and there. I would have thought you want more of that sort of player around when you've got a really young group coming through.
He's a pro. He's a good, honest pro.
So how's he going to go at the Lions?
Well, isn't he just going to – I mean, so
– it's JLT.
That's true.
Yeah.
So far, so good. Yep. Let's wait. But surely with the quality around him and the established front line around him, even with the bloke who's left and gone back to Collingwood, I think he's going to slip in and just be a very tidy, useful role player.
Part of the collective.
Absolutely, it would be. So we'll keep watching this space. It's a question really without an obvious answer at the moment. Maybe one of these days we'll find out the reason as to why Lyons has, at 26 years of age, found himself at his third AFL club, despite the fact that the numbers backing his career have been pretty good. Leadership group, Stel.
Yes.
I don't know where you want to come at this from.
I just want to give some facts around it, first of all. So I've had a look through all the leadership groups. Tigers are the only one that haven't announced it, but going on last year's record, they had three in the leadership group, one captain and Cochin assistants in Riewoldt and Rance, as I believe. So you'd assume that's the same. But here's just some actual numbers on it. So there's only one club that's got three at this current stage, two if the Tigers continue. Two clubs have got four in their leadership group, four players. Five clubs have got five in their leadership group. Five have also got six in their leadership group. Seven in their leadership group. There's one club. And there's three clubs that have eight. Now, of that is the Sydney Swans, who also have three captains. Now, that's the strange one for me, because you spoke about clubs that you respect and why we like certain players. I think I've got the most respect for the Sydney Swans because of their culture and their sustained success over the last 20-odd years, along with Geelong and probably the Hawks. So they're the one that, I guess, almost counteract my argument, that if they're the ones that are prepared to do that and have three captains, which I still don't quite get my head around with Rampy, Kennedy and Parker, but I sort of feel like if it's good enough for them, it's sort of good enough for everybody else, Andy. But it makes you wonder, what is the best formula? Or is there a best formula that you think, whether it be a workplace or a sporting club or, for us, AFL, that what is the number?
Do you think that the abolition of runners to the volume that we've known them to be in the past, does this now make the leadership group, and you talked about the NFL model before in American football, at that league, captain of the defence, captain of the attack, captain of the special teams, that you will want to have designated captains in all areas of the ground now who can be the organisers and the reminders and the cue givers that runners have traditionally been?
I think ideally, but if you're going out specifically to get a leadership group to move with the modern game, then I don't think that's the purpose of it. Okay. I heard Joel Selwood speak over the last 24 hours and he felt at the Cats they had a benefit with the new runners rule that they had experienced players in all lines, that they can communicate, can articulate, identify changes within the game. So they're out there in the heat of battle and they're still able to understand game scenarios and what's required at certain times. Now, as has been stated over the last 2 to 3 weeks, it's going to expose the younger teams that are in their own head a little bit and just battling to get through the game individually rather than go outside themselves and be able to work through a team scenario. But at some point, there's got to be a certain number. So I think for a younger team, for example, Andy, I think the Gold Coast Suns are one of them that's got eight in their group, as does the Brisbane Lions. If you do have a larger leadership group and they've got eight, that it actually exposes them to things outside themselves at a younger age. That ultimately right now, eight may not be the ideal number. That's a lot of voices. Yeah, that's a lot of voices on a Monday morning with an opinion.
Yep.
It's a lot of voices on a Thursday or a Friday getting ready for a game with an opinion on how the game should be played out. But at least in the short term, it gives them an opportunity to learn leadership. That in 2 years' time, that number may be reduced to four. It may be reduced to five because then you can identify the ones that excel in this particular area. But the Sydney Swans break the trend once again. Three captains, and I'm not a massive believer in two captains.
Well, let alone
three.
You saw rotating captaincy.
Yeah. Yep. But that was the same theory. It's a good point you bring up. So going back to that period of time, the Saints wanted to expose an individual to that sole responsibility year on year. So after 5 or 6 years, you've got six players that have been responsible for a whole playing group. So I understand the longevity or the purpose for that. But gee, the Swans just do their own thing.
They do.
Good on them.
We'll wait and see how it all plays out. It is a bit of a brave new world that we're going to be confronted by officially on Thursday week when Carlton and Richmond run out. We'll see how it all plays out. Hello, Joycey.
You're a happy man. Those girl blues are going really well.
No. It's a look.
What do we call them?
No, we call them the Blues.
Lady Blues.
The Blues, of course. It's an unbelievable, the way it's played out. I know people have been cranky about the conference system, and it's not without its merits, arguing about whether it's come in. In fact, it did come in a year too soon. So that's a given. Once they started the season, they could never wind that one back. You can do some, you can tweak things here and there mid-season, but I reckon if you've started a year, you've gone two or three games into a season, And it's all starting to look a bit dodgy in terms of the conference. You can't say, I tell you what, we're going to abolish the conferences. We're just going to have one ladder. You can't do that in any comp, can you?
No, no. I think I like the conference because eventually there's going to be more teams.
Yeah, next year will be better.
But they need to allow them to play more games.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. So the way it's played out this week, it's the final round of the home and away season. The top four teams play each other in Conference A. Anything can happen there. Like, literally anything can happen in terms of who goes in. And you've got – it's alive in Conference B with Geelong, Carlton, and the Brisbane Lions. Any one of those two can still make it. So she's on for young and old the final round. So it's a good
week. And don't underestimate it once you get to grand final, mate. Don't think that that conference is going to win because – it's a one-game series. When you get to a grand final, anything can happen.
It's funny how it works, isn't it? You know, things do happen. Yeah, Crazy things happen in sport.
That conference is the champion is going to come from that conference because you just don't know. Injuries, also the moment, nerves, anything can happen in a grand final.
Well, we're looking forward to Friday night, game three of the NBL final series. And obviously you and I are going to spend a bit of time having a chat about that. But as we often do, there's a couple of things that are rolling around before we get our teeth into the basketball. This was a conversation we wanted to have last week, and I had it just about every day to spend as much time as I possibly could talking about Cameron Smith's call to have the Melbourne Storm premierships that were taken away from them in 7 and 9 for salary cap breaches reinstated because of what happened with the NRL's ruling on Cronulla. So similar were the breaches, according to the way Melbourne Storm have looked at it. A different CEO and a different management group have said, okay, we'll let Cronulla keep its 2016 premiership, but we're going to fine them heavily and we're going to give them some other sanctions on the way through. Well, as soon as that ruling was made, Melbourne Storm said, hey, hang on. What they did was similar to what we were accused of doing, and yet we lost our two premierships of 7 and 9. Now, you've been in the game where, and you said what you said last week.
Yeah.
You said what you said last week about the competition that you were part of.
Yeah.
Where do you sit on this one?
Well, I understand Cameron Smith and Melbourne Storm being upset, but I'll take it a step further. And is there some sentimental stuff going on? You know, Cronulla hadn't won for 50 years. I don't know. But I would take it off both of them. I would take the championship off both of them, the trophy, including Cronulla, and go a step further. And whoever the runner-up team was, give the trophy to them.
Well,
or give the rings and the medals to them.
Well, Melbourne was the team that was beaten in 2016, ironically enough. 2007, Melbourne beat Manly, and in 2009, they beat Parramatta.
Well, that makes it tough.
So you're saying give them them the titles.
Step into the opponent's shoes if they've done everything right and they're being honest and all the work they've put in. A premiership doesn't take 1 year to win. It usually takes a couple of years, right, whether you're developing players and, you know, in some sports we've spoken about it, you can buy premierships,
yep.
You know, in soccer and now, even in our sport and basketball, there's what's called the luxury tax. But I prefer that. At least it's open and it's transparent, the luxury tax. Mm. So you know that teams are spending more. Rather than when I was coaching, there was supposed to be a salary cap that was being broken and no one was doing anything about it. And, mate, I'm the guy that was under the salary cap. So as a coach, you know, and the players, it makes us angry. And I know that we lost the championship. I think it was 2005 to the Sydney Kings.
Mm.
And I know for a fact that they're $1 million over the cap.
Jeez.
Right? And I've got to go on Foxtel TV and be the coach that says, well, I can't tell you what was going through my mind. I was so angry because it was started off the season with Sydney Kings not having any imports and they're going to go all Australian.
Yeah.
And there was a point system, and as it progressed, it was manipulated. And by the end of the season, they had two imports to go with the best Australians.
Yeah.
So I'm on Foxtel Sports, and we've been swept in 3 games. And I have to sit there and say, they asked me what happened. And I felt like saying, what happened? Have a look at the two teams. Mm. You want to explode, but you just do the right thing by the sport. Now, if you're being proven to be a cheat, cop the consequence. I say the medal or the trophy, I don't care, goes to that next team. Don't even put an asterisk beside it.
Right.
Give it to the team that finished second or supposedly.
So that hasn't happened here. So they basically remain null and void. The entire competition that year in terms of awarding a trophy to a winning team, they become null and void.
I don't agree with that. It should go to the team that was in the grand final.
What did you do about – can you take us back to 2005? What were you doing – were you raising concerns on the way through in 2005?
Teams and clubs had raised concerns over the years. Now, I think North Melbourne Giants got caught I think it was in the 90s, and they got a fine for $450,000. I'm pretty sure Adelaide 36ers got caught in 1999. That was $75,000 over. That's what they found.
Yep.
That was a fine. But when you're coaching a small franchise and you're trying to survive, like Wollongong, and there's, you know, we interviewed Larry Kesselman. He's concerned about the small franchises right now. They can't spend the sort of money Melbourne United and all that do. So it's really important. I still think that's not an excuse not to win, because I've been there. There's things you've got to, you've got to spend your money wisely. You've got to buy a balanced team, and you've got to develop. And if you develop players, you know, I had at Glenn Saville, Matt Campbell, teams did offer them $50,000, $80,000 more, and they stayed with us.
Mm.
I did say to them, well, you'll halve that in tax. It's only 40. But
cost of living.
You do hang on to some players. CJ Bruton left us for Sydney Kings for double, triple the money, whatever it was. You know, nothing, at that point in time, there's nothing you can do about it. And now it's open, though. What I do like is transparency, like the NBA. Yep. So you pay a luxury tax. But what I would like to see, I don't know what goes on with the luxury tax. I think that money should be invested into the teams, I don't know the ins and outs of it.
Consolidated revenue, Joyce.
To Cairns and Illawarra.
Yeah, well.
The lower level teams and to help them be more competitive in the financial market. But I still think if you spend your money wisely in basketball, the cap's not like the NBA. It's not like, you know, the amount of money in the AFL. If you're smart, I still think you can win in those franchises. Like Wollongong had talent, but they had an unbalanced team.
Yeah, yeah.
So they actually spent a bit of money this year. I don't know exactly how much.
Did Sydney get done for salary cap breach in 2005?
No, no.
Right.
No, they've got the championship, and I think it was a three-peat. They celebrated well.
Do you worry about saying this now? Like, is this something that you walk away from having this chat with us today? And you go, gee, I wish I'd said that.
Everyone within basketball knows, you know, but nothing's ever been done about it. But what has been done about it now, Larry Kesselman's been open and honest about what you spend for the betterment of the game, and I think the players have got to be paid more.
Mm.
But it's open about what they're paying players with a luxury tax. And I prefer it that way, so everybody knows where they stand rather than hide the fact that stuff's going on.
You raise a really interesting point before. It was a bit of it was on the way through. But you talk about the fact that Cronulla don't get the premiership taken off them.
They do. I think they should have it taken.
No.
If they were proven to cheat.
But they haven't had it taken off them is the point we're making because they've been, you know, a storied NRL club. They're a club in the right state. They've got a solid supporter base, and there's a Cinderella goodwill story.
50 years.
Yeah,
or they never won. I can't remember.
It's a good story, right? It's a good story, in inverted commas, for the game. No problems taking the two off Melbourne. Where the power base lies, do you believe this Sydney Kings? Yep. Hey, the NBL wants Sydney winning titles.
Yep.
It's good. Hey, it's good for the NBL to have Sydney winning titles. In the NRL, Melbourne, this little outlier who's kicking everybody's heads, they're not even genuine NRL territory down there. That's an easy one to take away. We can be certain, and we're going to be heroes in New South Wales and Queensland as an administration if you take the title away from a team that no one north of the border likes. Do you reckon this sort of stuff happens?
It's a possibility, but at the end of the day, they got caught, and the rules were in place supposedly to stop that. And there's a possibility of what you're saying, but I'm just going to go.
Sydney Kings, within
basketball, it's right now, right? Larry's encouraging clubs to spend more so that we can get the best players and have the best product. And the danger is, though, not everybody can spend that amount of money, but that's okay. But it's up front and open, whereas in the past it hasn't. I just rattled off North Melbourne Giants. I just rattled off Adelaide. Sydney Kings, that game, that's not the only one.
Mm.
All right, but I like the fact that it's transparent now and everybody knows what to spend.
Yep.
So, you know, you're supposed to abide by the rules. The rules are in place. You broke the rules. You lose the championship. Think about the team that did the right thing, the coaches and the players and the battling, had that gone through the season and done the right thing and have ended up with nothing that have been in that grand final. I want you to jump into their shoes.
Yeah, of course,
you
can,
you know, absolutely. In respect to how they might feel about it. And what they're thinking about it.
I think 1-300-736-736 should, rather than those two Melbourne years stay open, would you be comfortable if the breaches have been found to occur, as they did in 2016 with Cronulla, would you be comfortable with the teams that are still on the history books with the asterisk alongside their name, those names are just taken off the record books. They, like Lance Armstrong, they don't exist anymore in terms of the winner.
Yeah.
But the team that ran second, who was the second best side in the competition, do they slide in and get the trophy? I mean, would you be comfortable with that?
Well, we get some great messages. There's no guaranteeing the second side would have won. But no. They've made it to the grand final.
That's right.
Yeah. I think they should have it.
And a lot of people saying, should Carlton have the 1995 premiership taken off
them? Yeah,
Absolutely not.
didn't someone fund my boys in history? We won four premierships in a row, 1927, 28, 29, 30. There was no Saracat back then, but money helps.
There's a certain influential figure in the area who might have been helping a few boys find their way to the Collingwood
Footy
Club.
But today there's rules and there is a Saracat.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Jake's in Belgrave Heights. Would you be comfortable, Jake, if we saw 07-09 Stan, Melbourne have had it taken off them, but Manly and Parramatta respectively are crowned the champions those years?
Mate, I'm a Storm fan, so I would obviously, you know, it would obviously just be great if we obviously, you know, just had those back. But I actually was just probably calling up in regards to the other comments actually made earlier about just the guys who were obviously playing off in the basketball, I think it was the basketball like grand finals and everything else. If they actually lost and the other team had actually cheated, do you still actually think that they would be happy enough to have the actual title even if they hadn't actually won?
Would you be, Joycey, you're talking to a coach of a team that felt like they're on the wrong end, the receiving end of this. Would you have been content having the title given to you under those circumstances?
Knowing we cheated the salary cap.
Or knowing that you were beaten by a team that might have cheated the salary cap.
I know we were beaten by a team that cheated the salary cap.
So in your example, it's taken off Sydney.
Yep.
And it's given to you because you're the second best. Are you comfortable getting the ring on the finger as a result of that?
Yeah, it's more about my players being rewarded for all their effort and time they put in.
Yep. There you go, Jake. There's the answer to your question. Mark's in Sunshine West. Join in the conversation, mate.
Yeah, how you going, guys?
Good, thank you.
How are you?
Great. Sorry.
That's all right, Brendan. We go back a long way. We went to school together. I've got to go back to even when Carlton, Murray, your side was going for cheating the salary cap.
Yep.
And for nothing, and I'm not having to go at you, Andy, because of you're a Carlton supporter, but I'm just saying, the same thing happened in the AFL, but nothing ever happened about it. Like Geelong, they smashed Geelong in the 95 grand final, but Geelong didn't get that. Nothing was done. No premiership was taken off them.
Well, that's why we're having the conversation, Mark. I don't know. I mean, Joycey's just kind of brought this in, you know.
Carl on from the conversations this morning
that Jared was having with Todd Greenberg. So I don't know how I feel about. I'm not
you
automatically
have to be,
opposed
have to be proven
it.
To be broken. There's a lot of hearsay about, but in situations where it's proven,
it needs to be categoric and exactly. So no, Mark, I'll have a think about this. I'm sure after the show today, it'll roll around in the back of my mind, and I'll come to a conclusion one of these days. But and hopefully, it won't be clouded by what you know my team's been able to do on the way through. It was a long time ago now, 1995. Richard's in Narre Warren. Your thoughts on all of this, Rich?
Yeah, guys, I'd like to join the parallels of Joe Watson losing his Brownlow, and then they gave the Brownlow rightfully to Cochin and to Sam
Mitchell.
Sam Mitchell.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. The runner-up deserves to have the trophy if the other guys are determined to be broken the law.
Well, that's...
That's an interesting, pretty good point.
It could open the floodgates from an Essendon supporter's perspective.
This is Jared's fault, not our fault. This discussion this morning.
And it's funny. It's interesting on all of these other fronts because if that becomes a policy, salary cap breach, other side get it.
Yep.
The Essendon situation...
Yeah.
What happens there? I mean, there's a whole lot of,
That's a great point made by that person on the end of the phone. There.
And if that becomes your starting and end point, then that's just what it is for any of these circumstances that might bob up down the track.
Teams will be reluctant to cheat.
Well,
if they're in danger of losing it.
Well, what about the
you have your gold medal taken off you 10 years later if you've proven to have cheated?
Well, the Olympics do it. They just bump everybody up.
Yeah, they bump everybody up.
They didn't do it in the cycling, though, when Lance Armstrong lost his seven. Then there was probably a very good reason for that, Joycey.
Yeah, there might be some proof that the next person won. I don't know. But
I think that's exactly right.
They're doing it at the Olympics. They're doing it in a lot of sports.
Yeah, exactly.
People sacrifice so much to try and be successful. So, you know, you're coming up empty when you know somebody's broken the rules. It does hurt.
It's an interesting point you raise. Welcome back to the show. Joycey and I are just having a bit of a chat. Let's get lost in our own little world here every now and again. Rule changes. We're going to have a chat about those as well as game three coming up on Friday night. We're just scrapping around for a game that was instrumental in the line being put across the middle of the basketball court, which came about. And we're constantly talking about additions and alterations to our games. We get frustrated by it, but they're not always bad for the game.
Yeah, look, there's the college basketball game. It's probably brought about a lot of rule changes in basketball over the years. You know, I was told that there was an NCAA final, not necessarily the championship game, but the scores were 10 to 9.
10 to 9?
And it was an upset. I think it was Duke lost. And I met this elder statesman, so to speak, in the States, and he gave me some background on it. After that, they just froze the ball. It was up 5-4 at halftime. The other team was so dominant. But once they got a lead, they just, and there was no shot clock. So that,
yeah, right.
It's just an uproar. So they brought in the line across halfway. So you had less area to freeze the basketball. And then they brought in the shot clock. So shot clock went to 45 seconds. As we know today in the NBA game, it's 24.
Yep.
So it's all been about the development of the game and making the game more appealing to the fans. The 3-point line, you know, for example, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the 7-footer in the 70s, you know, everyone was just compressing in the paint, making players shoot from outside.
Mm-hmm.
So there was less scoring. It was congested, a bit like the flood, right?
Yep.
So they brought in the 3-point line to open it up. And hence, all of a sudden, we've got this magnificent game where you're shooting threes and it's open up on the inside. So that there's been rule changes constant for the betterment of the game of basketball, and coaches have to adjust.
When the 3-point line came in, you were old enough to remember
that. Yeah, I was part of that.
Was there uproar in the basketball community? Oh, what are they doing to the game? They're going to wreck the thing. What a joke. Was there any of that kind of negativity about the 3-point line?
I don't recall the negativity. I recall being a player, I think it was 83 or 84 it came in. And I remember, I reckon I only took 10 shots from the 3-point line, outside the 3-point line.
Right.
And at that point in time, players weren't shooting. It was still a constant direction from the coach to get the ball closer to the basket and not really value the 3-point shot. But all of a sudden, if you couldn't shoot that 3-point shot, as it is today, if you're a player and you can't make the 3-point shot, players will sag off you and still congest the paint, which is what, when we get to the Melbourne-Perth game, we'll talk about this.
Good.
It's happening. But, you know, they congest the painted area, and it's like, you know, when you lose possession of the ball in footy. And I still remember Sheeds, I had a great meeting with him after we won the championship, Adrian Dodora, we just touched on, okay to go there?
Yeah, of course.
Wanted to talk to me about beating the flood, which Terry Wallace, from a basketball background, is blamed for this, right?
That's exactly.
For running everybody back. My boy Terry, we played basketball together. And I gave him some suggestions, and what I suggested back then in 2001, mate, you just got to get the ball and fast break. What's fast break, which is what you use today, the terminology? Yeah. Get the ball and get it down there before it's set up. And if it is set up, even with Johnny Longmire, I had discussions with him in 2012 about, we call it ball reversal, which is, you know, they reverse the ball from side to side and then tactically maneuver their players to attack.
Everybody's doing that.
So they're all doing that now. So, but this is what transpired in basketball many years ago because of what was happening with the rule changes.
So would anybody, before I get to Albert's call, would there be anybody anywhere in the world in basketball now who doesn't think that the 3-point line is a good thing for the game?
I don't know how they could, because it opens the game up. Obviously, you get the extra point. And one of the things I spoke to Sheeds about was, well, maybe a goal should be worth more than 6 points.
We know
it went there. No, but it went right?
AFL.
If you really want the game to open up, I'm a big believer.
No.
There should be a 9-point goal.
Brendan, stop it now.
Open it up.
You, no.
Those boys kicking goals from outside 50. Come on,
no.
Andy.
Albert in far north Queensland. Straighten us up here, Albert. He's going too far. We're agreeing with him too much. How are you, mate?
Yeah, pretty good. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Right.
You're talking to Brendan.
Hey, guys.
Joycey, is it an indictment on our coaches in Australia that Ben Simmons doesn't know what a hand he is and haven't forced the issue? If he's playing national juniors, shouldn't he have been brought into line then? Can he improve it? And obviously he won't reach his potential the way the game is a 3-point game unless he develops some sort. He's the worst shot to come to the NBA for years, I reckon.
Well, I've seen a lot worse, I can tell you that now. At least he doesn't move the ball from side to side. Look, one of the things with Ben is, I don't think it's a diamond with it. It's okay if you're left-handed or right-handed and the opposition doesn't know which hand you shoot with as well.
Yeah.
I'll just make that point. That's a huge advantage. One of the things I've noticed about Ben, he's got, and I talked to Brett actually while I was over there, he's got massive hands. And so you find Shaq, guys with massive hands, they actually have trouble shooting the basketball. And I don't know, look, again, inside, I think he's got his hand placement. This is my personal opinion. He looks like his hand's on the side of the ball rather than under. So, therefore, the ball orbits. It's spinning sideways.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So, in a normal basketball, if you've got good hand placement, the ball spins backwards. It doesn't matter. Some shooters spin it quickly, some slower, but it spins backwards. It hits front, rolls in. So, the moment his shot hits the ring, it rolls out. So, I don't think there's a whole lot wrong with his shot. And going back to you, he can get away with it. If it's me, 6 foot or 5'11", three quarters, Collingwood 6 footer, you're not going to get away. The fact that he's 6'10" and a point guard, he can get into the paint anytime and he can make these left and right hand hookies, he can get away with it. But you're making a good point because LeBron, I can tell you, when we were at the Athens Olympics, I was assistant coach. Our game plan was to let LeBron shoot. And I can tell you when he got the ball right beside us on the bench, we're yelling out, shoot. And he was hesitant, and he came away from that Olympics. They lost three games. This is the truth. They lost three games at that Olympics, and they just snuck in to win the bronze medal. They finished fourth, unfortunately for Spain, finished first on the crossover, play the USA. But the final was between Argentina and Italy. Now, the reason why the Americans didn't win that year is because they didn't have enough shooters. And LeBron, who was only 19 years old, went away and worked on his game, but... I got no doubt that Ben Simmons will continue to work on his game and eventually have a 3-point shot.
I just love the fact that the Australian bench was just taunting LeBron James. I just love it. I think that is brilliant.
You know, that's the challenge.
I love it. That's great.
That's the challenge.
Hey, time's on the fly, as it always is with you. Just in, you know, as big a nutshell as you want, tell us how game three is going to play out, and at the end of it, tell us who's going to win.
Well, I think the team that defends and rebounds, the old Chuck Daly, philosophy is no longer with us. One of the greatest coaches, the Detroit Pistons.
Great team.
Bad boys.
What a great team they were.
The philosophy is defense and rebounding wins championships, and that's what's going on. Both teams here, the first game, Perth, you know, kept Melbourne United to 71. You reverse it at home, Melbourne United keep Perth to 74. So whoever's playing the best defense and rebound is going to win the championship. But I think he's our boys.
He's holding his T-shirt
and
right
to
now.
Vince Crivelli for the Melbourne United shirt. I've got it wrong. I think the boys are going to get Perth.
You reckon they will?
Yeah.
The pivotal game.
And a big chance Sunday to win it.
They're sharing the load, aren't they?
A big chance. They're sharing
the load. Yeah. It feels like they're a player or two deeper, doesn't it? Am I right in saying it just feels like they're a player or two deeper than Perth?
I think our top seven's better than their top seven. Their top nine's better than ours. But they're getting away with a 40-minute game. You get away with the top seven. But right now the challenge is for Damian Martin and Mitch Norton to hit shots, because what you just talked about, and that they aren't guarding those guys on the three-point line. They're congesting and stifling their offense. That's what Melbourne United's doing.
Yep.
So those guys have to hit a couple of shots or they have to create. So that's a little bit of strategy that's going on between those teams right now.
We'll watch with a great deal of interest. As always, thanks for coming in.
Thanks,
I love it when you come
in. Today.
a lot of stuff. There's a whole lot more we could have gone to as well. Joycey's been here with his McCafe coffee. Catch up the ham and cheese pocket for just $6 at Macca's. There's so many forums available to sports people these days to tell their stories, particularly from a really personal, first-person perspective, way more so now than have been available in the past. I think we're all better for being able to access the thoughts of current-day players and past players. Like we have, and it's only recently that he's a past player at AFL level, Cam Pedersen has written through the Players Association website one of the letters to my younger self, which is a really interesting series that the players are being asked to produce. I read his, it was either last night or this morning, I can't remember, and thought, let's try and get him on for a chat about it, because there's a lot of really good stuff in there, and he's down teaching somewhere down near Phillip Island, I reckon, and he's been able to step out of the class for 10 minutes and have a chat to us, which is great. Cam, thanks for your time, mate.
Thanks for having me on.
How did it come about that you were asked to do this letter to your younger self? Before I ask you about specifics within it, how did it come about that you did this?
So the AFLPA do a great job now when you have your exit interviews, making sure that you have your life in order for life after football, because a lot of people come into the game at 18 and they've never, don't really know what it's like on the outside, and they do a thorough process where you go through different things to make sure, you know, you're socially okay and that you're financially okay, and they both things that you know, they would like you to be able to show them that you'll be fine when you leave football. So I was just asked by the AFLPA that, yeah, if I would mind writing a letter to my younger self, that would have helped me when I started my career.
That's great. 80 games you've played for North Melbourne and Melbourne on the way through. And I'm going to ask you about a couple of the individual points that you've raised that you would have liked to have been able to tell your younger self, you know, to get ready for these experiences on the way through. But as you're writing this letter, how many of those things that you addressed in the letter to your younger self didn't you do or weren't you aware of when you started playing at this level?
For me, it's really hard when you're at AFL because your teammates are your friends, but like your best mates and that, but basically you're all competing against each other.
Yeah.
So it's a hard balance to, you know, be able to still be great mates and then be happy for each other when each other are playing, even though obviously you'd be frustrated that you're not playing. So that's probably one of the hardest parts about it.
So let me ask you about some of the individual things that you would have raised with your younger self, Cam, that you did in this letter. The first one, learn not to be so hard on yourself while playing the game. Were you hard on yourself? Were you particularly hard on yourself as you were going through the various stages of your career at this level?
Yes, definitely, because you play AFL because you're so competitive. And before you go to the AFL, normally, I guess, especially if you're 18 or so, you've probably been like the best or one of the best at whatever you do. And when you go into an AFL environment, everyone is elite at everything. So sometimes, yeah, it can be hard. You get a bit discouraged, but how well other people can do other things.
Always give to others and always make time for people. Is it by nature, Cam, an environment where you intrinsically maybe have to be a bit selfish and you aren't aware of that point, always giving to others and always making time for people?
Yeah, for me, I have a bit of a motto is that you never have bridges, and that's worked out well for me. Obviously getting a job at a private school, and even when I was talking to for playing this year, a lot of the clubs looked into like things like my Instagram and my Facebook to see what people had written about me when I'd retired.
Yeah.
So it is very important. And, you know, I was once, a kid that had AFL players come into my primary school, and you definitely can remember the ones that gave a lot and seemed interested in the ones that didn't. It tends to stay with you when you grow up.
Yep. So the second part of that, I wonder whether you've kind of just answered it, but show a genuine care and have a positive influence on those around you. Was that something that you were mindful of during your playing days, or is that something that you've kind of retrospectively thought, you know what, I could have done a bit more of that?
Probably my first 3 or so years. I guess, yeah, you can become a bit selfish because you're just worried about, when you're young, you just worry about yourself. And, you know, I want to get a game, and that's what, all you're pretty much worrying about. And then as you get older, you tend to think about how can I make other people around me better, or how can I help someone else give my time to, you know, it might be to improve Wiedemann, who was obviously coming up and playing the same position, where when you're young, all you're worried about is just how you can be better.
Yep.
Yeah, worrying about how your teammates can become better.
What about point number four? And this is all part of the letter that you wrote to yourself that you can get on the AFL Players website, and I'll tell people how to get there in a moment. But never lose sight that it is a game, and the reason you started was the love for the game. When you're in that level and you've talked about the competitive nature and how you're eyeballing a teammate, Cam, for a position that there might be two or three of you vying for and there's only one spot, is it easy to lose sight of the fact that it is a game and remember the kind of boyish love that you had for it when you were sort of coming up through the ranks?
Yes, definitely. I guess if you were to put it in terms, what other job do you get recorded every minute of the day and people can show vision of you? It's not like even when I'm teaching now, you can have an off day and then you can just regroup the next day. But on the football field, if you do something wrong, it's in the paper, or it's on social media, or, you know, it used to be you'd worry about going into a review about what, you know, your teammate's going to think of you or what the coach is going to bring up. Are you in the clip? So, just getting back to the basics, remembering that, yes, it is a job, but you remember that you're very lucky because there's only 800 AFL players, so it's probably one of the smallest, overall jobs you can do in Australia. Oh, so you're very lucky and just enjoy it.
Most of us have cut off a little finger, a little toe to be given the opportunity to do it. You've done 80 times in your life. It will be demanding on your family. So remember, they are on the ride with you. How often did you, and do you reckon others do, Cam, for want of a better term, take for granted those who are absolutely closest to you?
Yes, definitely. As they're on the ride with you, when you lose a game, you come home, especially because I've got obviously kids and a wife, you know, you're a bit grumpier than you normally are. So you're a bit testier than what you normally are.
Yeah.
You miss out on first days of school because we always had our Luchador camp when the girls would go to school. You miss weddings and things like that just, as you would say, normal people would be able to do. But it's a short career, and you've just got to remember that although it's hard on the family, that they understand that, you know, it's for a short period of time, and when you are with them, you got to make sure you give everything that you have.
So towards the end of your career, which, you know, concluded at the end of the 2018 season with the D's, by that stage you've got three daughters. Am I right in saying that, Cam? You've had your three kids by then.
Yep.
How much was the work-life balance? You're getting to a more kind of veteran stage of your career, and you're getting a bit older. How much clearer and in focus for you was the balance at the end of your career compared to what it was like at the start, given all of the changes that you've gone through personally?
Yeah, definitely. At the start of my career, I guess, because I was probably a little bit lucky, I started when I was 23. So I got passed in November. We had our first child in the February, and then debuted round one, which was in the March. So it was all, come up pretty quickly. But, as you spend more time in the game, you get better at it's all about being organised and time management. So that meant a lot of late nights, because obviously I was doing university as well, a lot of late nights doing that, making sure I would plan so I could, you know, take the kids out and do fun things when we had the opportunity, knowing that, you know, I might be away for 3 days because we're playing in Darwin or something like that, where I'd miss out seeing them.
Mate, it's a real interesting piece. I'm glad the Players Association are getting people like you, people who have had such a, you know, a long and committed life in the game, to pen these letters to yourself, and we get a chance to reflect upon your journeys with you. I think they're a really good read. AFLplayers.com.au is the place to go if you want to see Cam Pedersen's letter to himself. There are another couple there, and I'm sure there's going to be many, many more. Mate, I know you're down on the island. Good luck having a kick down there. Good luck at school. Good luck with your young family. Thanks for coming on and reflecting in this way on the career that you're lucky enough to have. I appreciate you giving us your time.
Terrific. Thanks for that.
Good on you. Cam Pedersen, 80 games he played for North Melbourne and Melbourne between 2011 and 2018. Go to aflplayers.com.au if you want to read his piece. Welcome back to the show. Lovely to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Just trying to get our ducks in a row here. We just move on, though. When one of them steps out of place, we just push on. Hopefully that little duck doesn't get run over by a runaway truck. And it's not likely to with Adam Peacock in the house, who doesn't understand any of what I've just spoken about. In fact, there's only two other people on the planet who know what the hell I'm talking about. From Fox Sports, of course, one of the preeminent voices on the round ball game. And what a morning we had to savour this morning with the mighty Cristiano Ronaldo doing what not many people can do. Adam Peacock, thanks for joining us, my friend.
A bit worried about all this violence against birds being run over by heavy-duty machinery.
We had some nice audio to play, but unfortunately buttons weren't getting pushed by those who need to push buttons. You know, they've had big weekends out there, you know, festivals all over the joint. They'll be better next week, you know.
It happened.
He dreamt it, mate. He had the premonition. He dreamt that he was going to do it, bring them back from 2-0 down in front of the adoring home fans. Never been done against Atletico Madrid by an Italian club at Champions League level, and lo and behold, he does it. Unbelievable stuff. It was extraordinary.
Yeah, he's not short on belief.
No.
As you can probably tell. that's not a concern for him in any part of his life these days. No, I'm not surprised. Like, we've seen some monumental comebacks. I mean, Manchester United last week. We saw a few last season in the Champions League. That's why I love the Champions League, because even though a team holds a 2-0, 3-0 lead in the first leg, they get to the second leg. There's no guarantees, especially when there's players of the ilk of Ronaldo or Messi who can change the context of an entire tie in 5 minutes by scoring two goals. That's just how good they are. And he's done it again. I'm not shocked by it. I'm sure Atletico Madrid aren't shocked by it.
they were just hoping it wasn't going to happen. Unfortunately for them, it certainly did.
Oh, yeah, before we get back to the specifics of the game, just on the Champions League, there aren't many better annual sporting competitions on the planet, I don't reckon. You and I both, you know, and a lot of people listening to this radio station love more than just, you know, the sport that is of our primary interest. We watch a whole lot of other sports, and there aren't many better competitions every year than the Champions League. It feels like it's getting bigger and better and holding more status in the lives of professional footballers, Adam, as every year goes by. Oh, where's he gone? It was such a good question. It was a really good question, and suddenly Adam Peacock's not there to answer it. But if you've got – I wonder whether you share that view. If you had to rank the things that you most look forward to on a sporting basis every year, if you are a, you know, full-on rounded sports fan, I think we might have him back. I'd love to know where you rank the Champions League every year in terms of the things that you most look forward to on an annual basis. I don't know how much of that question you heard, but it feels like players rank – the Champions League on it, almost on a more so on an annual basis, Adam, as every year goes by.
As a football fan, just as a general football fan, and my team that I follow intently, Newcastle, are away off playing Champions League football. It's the best thing I look forward to each season.
Yeah.
About this time, February, March, when the knockout stages hit. The group stages are good, but they don't throw up that many variations. Really, a couple of odd results here, but usually the best teams get through. But when you get to that last 16, oh, there's nothing like it in football. The Copa Libertadores in South America is equally as good, especially for people who are from that part of the world. But seriously, this UEFA Champions League, and no wonder it's the thing that all clubs crave getting into, because the benefit there financially are huge, and commercially, I'd imagine, as well, around sponsorship is massive. But from a pure football sense, about enjoyment and seeing the best players play in the big moments and come up with moments like we saw Ronaldo on a consistent basis, nothing beats it year in, year out.
So they sign him from Real Madrid on this extraordinary offer. And as you look at what other athletes in other sports get paid, suddenly it starts to, you know, look like a pretty good deal for Juventus at the end of it. You know, I know he's getting paid £500,000 a week or whatever it is, and he's got the deal for four. I mean, it's extraordinary. I mean, it's just, it's insane. Yeah. But then you see what they do in Major League Baseball, or you see what Odell Beckham gets, and suddenly you go, well, you know what, this bloke, he probably deserves every cent.
Oh, it's market forces, yeah.
Exactly. So this is what they get him for, Adam. Like, they bring him over. Yeah, they want to win titles, Serie A titles, obviously, but this is the stage they bring him over for. Now, they haven't won it yet. They've got a fair way to go before they do. But for him to deliver with that pressure on his back, I hope he gets the respect he deserves for that.
He will, certainly, from Juventus fans and your normal football fan. Obviously, there's a few things that have gone on off the pitch about Cristiano Ronaldo, about the type of person that he is or once was, in relation to a certain case that's going on in the United States, with something that may or may not have happened with a woman. And yeah, that's all murky, that.
But yep.
As football fans, I can only judge him on his football ability, and that is nothing short of extraordinary. And for footballing purposes, what Juventus have been able to do there was fantastic. Bit of a risk, because he's the wrong side of 30.
Yep.
And he is such a physical specimen. You do wonder to yourself, okay, he pushed himself to the limit physically in terms of preparation and getting himself right. When is it all just going to break down? Like, he's not a Leo Messi who you look at and you go, well, this guy's going to be like this for the next 5 years. It's more of a guarantee with Messi that he's going to be able to maintain his level than Ronaldo, because Ronaldo is such a physical player. But keeps on doing it, and that's the amazing thing. And the debate goes on, Messi or Ronaldo. I'm a foot in either camp. I just enjoy watching them both play football, and we're just lucky to have them both at the same time, because when they're gone, in terms of being able to watch them week in, week out, there'll be a void.
Yeah, no doubt. The other game this morning, Schalke were, they obviously were up against it, but the 7-0 drubbing that was dished out in the end for a, I don't know what it was. And it was a 10-2, I think, the aggregate in the end. I'm not even sure what it was.
10-2,
Was it just Schalke saying, oh, well, we've come far enough in the end? I didn't watch any of the Man City game because I was watching the Juventus game, but it was obviously a complete rout in that second half.
Yeah, once
once hope went away from Schalke, it completely got taken away from them. There were early goals for Manchester City, and that was the only hope that Schalke were going to have, that they'd rattle the home side and score an early goal, and they'd go off course, but nothing like that happened. And with that result, I suppose it makes Mike Mulvey with the Central Coast Mariners feel a little bit about himself that it can happen to a big club in Germany like Schalke. It can happen to the Mariners against Wellington. It can happen in football, but they were just way too good. That tie was lost in the last 5 minutes of the first leg over in Germany when Schalke had something, and then they didn't have something because Manchester City scored those two late goals.
You've got some gears, haven't they? So nil all going into the second legs at Bayern v Liverpool and Barcelona v Lyon. They'll be the games we see tomorrow morning. Is Jurgen Klopp starting to just unravel a little bit? He's seeming to get a bit touchy. He's been smiling all year, and it's suddenly starting to disappear. Is the pressure starting to tell?
Probably, but he's only human. If he's not feeling it now, I mean, I can't imagine what you Liverpool lot are feeling right now. Oh, actually, I can. I've seen it before and it didn't end well. So
it never does, mate. It never does.
No. Look, he's only human if he's starting to seem a bit tetchy or more tetchy than his usual affable self. But still, you listen to his press conferences. And I love listening to the guy talk because there's a huge dose of realism in everything that he says. That it makes you think, oh, yeah, some coaches you hear and they just start dancing in circles or saying things that just plainly aren't true or didn't happen. He doesn't do that. He doesn't dance around that, but he's always going to defend his players. So there's that balance that he has to find in that regard. It'll continue to build. This Premier League race is going to go down to last weekend. I can just see it. It's nothing that's going to sort itself out in the next few weeks.
Yeah, great.
That's going to be great for your mental state going forward.
Fantastic.
And your nerve engine. But this week, that's a toss of the coin because Liverpool are so dangerous on the counter. So even if they don't dominate the game, they can score two goals in the blink of an eye.
In 45 seconds, give me your personal reaction to the caretaker appointment of Alan Stadtsic at those Mariners when you heard the news yesterday.
Yeah, I was happy for him because as we heard from out of the Matildas, and it was a very hard thing to disseminate and find clarity with, that it wasn't hugely serious. It wasn't something that was going to end up in some kind of criminal charge. Or was, you know, the first thing that you thought when you got the sack out of two surveys, what we were told was, like, you've done something really serious. Well, okay, he can get on with his life now. And the Matildas have got on with things, and that was always going to be not a consideration in my regard if they got the right coach, that the team itself was going to be fine. But Stadtsic has been able to get on with his life, and that was the main thing. It didn't ruin him for years to come. And wish him all the success in the world with the Mariners. They need some help, and he might be the man to deliver it.
Well put. Always good to have you on the show, mate. You guys do a super job over there, and we're always lucky when we get access to any of you. Thanks for being part of it today.
Cheers, mate. Chat soon. Good luck.
Good on you. Thank you. Adam Peacock, Fox Sports football expert. Remarkable. Cristiano Ronaldo. Just remarkable.